The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony, welcome to the show.
Okay, to Benji, I think it's more difficult to get to Israel than it is to get to the office at the moment. So I think Israel traffic is down pretty much by 100%, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Although actually we still have been having Aliyah flights and some repatriation flights, so there is a little bit of movement, but yeah, not exactly like
there is a movement, that's true, and to be fair, I don't think there are any direct flights, but I think that there are potentially flights that fly via other places. I think Ethiopian are flying, and I think the Turkish are flying. So to the extent that the airports are open, I think there are ways and means for those people who are very determined.
First off, on our story for today, Anthony, the U.S. has announced further stringent sanctions to be imposed on Iran. What kind of sanctions are we looking at here?
Yeah, we were sort of reluctant to talk about this yesterday, Middle Eastern politics stuff, but I think this is an important story because we've got this issue going on in the background where the Iranian nuclear deal is now coming to its end. And on October the 18th, the sanctions, the arms embargo that has been in place against Iran, which was imposed by the United Nations, is due to be lifted. And the U.S. put in an official notification to the United Nations about a month ago saying that they would wish to see the so-called snapback of sanctions against Iran implemented. The status of the U.S.'s request is unclear, and this has come out in a letter that's been written by the UN Secretary General Guterres, Antonio Guterres, who wrote that he didn't think that the U.S. has a situation. What he wrote was that it's unclear as to what the situation is at the moment because of the fact that the U.S. effectively withdrew itself from the Iranian nuclear deal. There is some question as to whether the U.S. now has the right to demand the snapback of these sanctions at the United Nations. And interestingly, out of the 15 United Nations Security Council members, I think something like 13 of them do not actually support the snapback of the sanctions. And the so-called E3, which are the three European countries, the UK, France, and Germany, have certainly said that they have no intention to support this. We know that China and Russia, the other two signatories to the agreement with Iran, the nuclear agreement, also don't support the snapback. So what's happened in the meantime is that the United States has decided to impose its own set of sanctions, which are quite sweeping and quite stringent, quite severe sanctions. They've imposed sanctions on 25 entities and individuals. And what's interesting about the sanctions that they've imposed, which include executive order sanctioning the Iranian Ministry of Defense and the Armed Forces Logistics and Iran's defense industry, as well as individuals, the organization director. The sanctions also include Venezuela's president, Nicolas Maduro, who, of course, is currently in the situation where his presidency is being contested. And there is a view which says that Maduro has been cooperating with Iran to somehow bring arms to Iran during the period of this sanction, of this embargo, the arms embargo against Iran. And as a result of that, the U.S. administration has imposed this set of sanctions on the Venezuelan president as well. So this is quite far-reaching. And of course, today, the UN General Assembly meeting is due to begin. President Trump is due to address the UN General Assembly meeting, a virtual UN General Assembly meeting. So it doesn't quite have all the fanfare that we've seen in the past and that has been traditional. But certainly, nonetheless, the state is the same UN General Assembly meeting that we've seen. And so there is a lot of uncertainty at the moment around Iran and the arms embargo, and that potentially within a month from now, Iran could be importing arms from the international community, which is a very worrying situation, especially for Israel.
Anthony, just a little bit of clarification in terms of like snapbacks and sanctions. These are words that, you know, I associate with the so-called Iran deal, the JCPOA, whatever it's called, the Joint Comprehensive Long thing that we know was negotiated under the Obama era. But my understanding is that these are actually a separate set of sanctions that were put in by the UN regardless. So, I mean, is it actually correct to call something a snapback because those were sort of sanctions that were specifically put in place for the Iran deal when Iran would violate things? I just want to make sure that we're talking about the same thing here.
Well, the snapback was because at the time that the Iran deal was entered into, there were certain things that were allowed to Iran, certain concessions that were made to Iran as a result of the agreement. That was really why Iran was so much in favor of entering into this agreement, because back in 2015, when the agreement was signed, a whole lot of concessions were allowed to Iran, including the movement of currency to and from Iranian banks, and there were a whole series of concessions that were made. And the idea was that if Iran violated the agreement, then those concessions would effectively be taken away from it. And that's the concept of the snapback, that there would be a snapback of these sanctions that were previously in place that the U.S. administration and other governments had been had imposed upon Iran. So now that Iran has actually quite clearly violated the agreement, there's no consequences. There are no snapback. There has been, at least up until now, no snapback of these provisions, even though it was quite clearly set out. And I remember President Obama lecturing Prime Minister Netanyahu saying, this is a good deal because we've got these snapback provisions. If Iran goes so far as to violate any of the provisions, we will simply reinstitute all of those stringent sanctions. Of course, that never happened. So, now they're talking about snapback, but there's nothing been snapback. Having said that, there is the separate UN arms embargo that's been placed on Iran, which is due to expire next month. And that's the piece that's really currently worrying for Israel.
Very interesting and quite concerning. Something else is quite concerning, Anthony. Israeli hospitals are now unable to accept new coronavirus patients. What's that all about?
Well, there is some confusion as to whether that is in fact the case or not, because we've heard a lot of, we've heard yesterday that that two hospitals, one in Ashdod and one in Jerusalem, have decided that they can no longer accept new coronavirus victims. And that came along with an announcement from the Ministry of Health telling us about the state of Israeli hospitals and the fact that there is such an overload at the moment of coronavirus patients in Israeli hospitals. This morning, we've had an announcement from some of those hospitals saying that the Ministry of Health numbers are really not that accurate. And somehow there seems to be an attempt on the part of the Ministry of Health to make things look a lot more serious than they really are. Having said that, the Ministry of Health has come out to hospital directors telling them that they need to stop elective surgery. Hospitals have said that's not okay because there are people who are receiving so-called elective surgery who really need it relatively urgently. And so this has really placed a stranglehold on the ability of these hospitals to function even outside of the coronavirus sphere. So at the moment, there seems to be some sort of tension between the Ministry of Health and some of the individual hospitals as to how they are acting. But we do know that Minister of Defense Benny Gantz has ordered the IDF to set up a separate field hospital, which will accommodate up to 200 people for the case when the hospitals might be overloaded with coronavirus victims. So in fairness, the current situation in Israeli hospitals is a little unclear, because of this conflict of information that we're receiving, on the one hand from the hospitals themselves, on the other hand from the Ministry of Health. The two don't seem to be really speaking the same language about things to the general public. And so the public is genuinely confused as to exactly, you know, what the situation is in those hospitals.
Now, also connected, in fact, to Iran and the nuclear issue in a tangential way, is our next story. A Bulgarian court has sentenced two men to life sentences for killing Israeli tourists. This happened quite some time ago. What was the context and the background of this particular issue?
So this was an incident that took place back in 2012 when a bomb exploded on a tourist bus in the Bulgarian Black Sea resort of Burgas. And at the time, five Israeli tourists and a Bulgarian bus driver were killed in this explosion. And it's taken up until now for the case of two individuals, one an Australian of Lebanese origin and the second a Canadian, also of a Lebanese origin. Their case has been heard in a Bulgarian court. The problem is, of course, that the case has been held in absentia, which means that the two individuals who are being tried were actually not physically present at the case. They were tried in absentia, which means that there's nothing that can really be done, even though they've been tried, they've been found guilty, and they have been sentenced to life in prison without parole. They actually are not going to prison at all because the current whereabouts of those individuals is not clear. And so obviously they would avoid as much as they can going to Bulgaria in order to avoid being arrested and placed in prison on this life sentence that they've been given. But there seem to have been clear links to Hezbollah, and the prosecutors managed to show that there was a very clear link between these two individuals and Hezbollah. And of course, Hezbollah is very much Iranian supported. So it seems as if the Hezbollah was behind the attack in terms of the logistics and in terms of the financing. These two individuals came to Bulgaria to carry out the attack that was clearly targeted against a group of Israelis. It wasn't just a random attack because Burgas on the Black Sea coast is quite a popular holiday resort, not only for Israeli tourists in the pre-coronavirus era, but of course for many, many tourists coming from different countries, including those coming from Russia and from the Ukraine and from Turkey and from countries around the area, around the Bulgarian, around the Black Sea in general. It's a very popular resort. And in fact, even German tourists have been known to visit that area. And as a result of which, it was pretty clear to all concerned that this was very, very targeted indeed, with Israeli tourists being the ones who were specifically targeted. And so now that the trial has been held and these two individuals have been sentenced to life in prison, we can thank the Bulgarian government and the prosecution for supporting this case and for being so determined in following it up after 8 years. But unfortunately, the two individuals concerned are still free to roam around wherever they are at the moment, and they will not be serving their sentences, at least for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, very, very concerning that people like that are still out there, but hopefully this does add a little bit of extra pressure on them, in terms of their whereabouts and where they're able to move to. Anthony, that's all we have time for today. Thank you so much for joining us, and we'll chat to you again tomorrow on the Israel Report.
I look forward to it. Thank you. Have a good day ahead.